From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Are you thinking about the possibility of transitioning an area of your lawn into something more diverse, like maybe a meadow? A question I'm asked a lot is how to go about it, the actual preparatory steps. So I invited Benjamin Vogt, a specialist in natural landscape design, to walk us through the process. More in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Walcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Today's guest is owner of Prairie Up, formerly called Monarch Gardens. And besides offering garden design to clients nationwide, he teaches online classes and webinars as well. He's the author of two books, A New Garden Ethic, and more recently, Prairie Up, An Introduction to Natural Garden Design. He's based in Nebraska, and I'm so glad to welcome him back to the show today. Hi, how are you?
I am super. Thank you for having me on again.
Are you sweltering out there or no? We've got the heat this year. Is that the deal?
our sweltering starts on Friday and only lasts 4 days, thankfully.
Okay. So before we get started, I'll say that I'm going to do a book giveaway of Prairie Up with the transcript of the show. So that's fun for people. They can comment and enter over on the blog. And congratulations on your new website, which is so loaded with information. It's not just beautiful, but it's got lots of great stuff in it. So you just survived that big process too, right? Talking making a meadow, making a website, they're sort of the same.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That was over a 4 month process to get that website going and make sure it actually worked. And there's still hiccups, as you know, that's how it goes. But I just wanted to be sure that I did something really different. I felt like something that wasn't out there, just telling people, hand-holding them, this is how you do it. This is how you convert from lawn and create a prairie garden of any size. And here's a bunch of free stuff. And if you want to go further, you can get online classes or something.
Yeah. No, well, it's good. And I've been clicking around and learning things. And that's why I got in touch. And, you know, we're doing this update today because another segment today, because there's a lot of good stuff that I realized can help me to answer questions that I don't have the firsthand knowledge that you do by any means. So one thing I just want to say is, like, on the homepage, it says, quote, lawn is a weed. So is it?
Oh, I like to start trouble, but hopefully it's good trouble. Lawn is, well, I mean, you know, so often we hear that, you know, native plants are weeds, or, you know, anytime you take a prairie plant or a prairie planting and put it in the context of suburbia, for example,
right,
especially when you're replacing lawn, well, that is suddenly a weed, right? But if it's out in a wild prairie or grassland or meadow or savanna or something like that, it's not a weed. So it's, you know, that's always very frustrating to me. And I know a lot of my clients, and especially talking with weed control inspectors, their idea of weeds are a little bit outdated too often. Things are getting better across the country, but we still have this outdated conception of what a weed is. So I'm just like, lawn is the weed. It's so artificial. We have to throw so much water and fertilizer and maintenance on it that just for it to be maintained.
Right. So, as I said in the introduction, you know, a lot of people are probably eyeing their expanse of lawn lately and thinking of making a change because, you know, thanks to a lot of the education that people like yourselves have helped with over the recent years. And, you know, I know a lot of people probably think, well, but, you know, I don't live in Nebraska like he does, but there's different types of plant communities. You know, I say the word meadow, you might say the word prairie in some cases. There's savanna, there's fields, there's, well, what are all those things? Can we just start with that before we go and try to teach people to make a meadow?
Yeah, that's why exactly, you know, this is exactly why I think it's on page 2 of my book, Prairie Up, that whole explanation. I think these terms are very interchangeable for most of us. It's not interchangeable for, you know, soil scientists or conservationists or something, but we all have the same image in our head, right? I think when people say meadow, maybe you mean a open glade full of prairie, full of flowers that's surrounded by trees. But these ecosystems occur in every state. This prairie idea, this meadow idea, this savanna idea, they're in every, I mean, we have the longleaf pine savanna remnants in the southeast, the Piedmont along the east coast, the Palouse in the northwest, the Carrizo Plain in California, sandhills here in Nebraska. So we have these environments and ecosystems everywhere. So it's not like prairie or meadow is just in the middle of the country, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. One of the first plants I met, in quotes, when I came to the place where I live and garden maybe 35 years ago or so, was little bluestem grass, which I had only ever seen previously when I was visiting in Wisconsin with Neil DeBall, who owns Prairie Nursery. And I was like, why do I have little bluestem here? And you know, I was like, what? I just saw that out there. It says prairie, you know, it says, huh? What? and you know, yeah, exactly. There are grassland plant communities in many different places. Yeah.
Yeah, and well, I'm just take little bluestem. It's pretty much in almost every state in the lower 48. It's just a couple states I don't think it's native to. And I always like to tell people, especially folks on the East Coast, we share so many of the same plants. Like right here in eastern Nebraska, we have so many of the same native plants. And that's all because of geologic history. Now, if we go 100 miles west of where I am, then things start to shift a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So if we want to think about kind of getting started, we don't have to give it an exact name, but let's just use the word meadow, because it sounds to me, in a way, the word meadow sounds the closest to gardening, because, you know, there was all that commercial, I guess, and this is terrible that I'm influenced by it, but, you know, you heard of, you know, the marketing devices like meadow in a can, or meadow, you know, meadow mixes for seeds that are meadow mix for this area of the country or that kind. They tend to market things like that, as opposed to, say, a prairie mix earlier on to gardeners, right? So let's just use the word meadow for the moment. There's a lot of ways to get started, but if you don't get started, whether you're going to work with seeds or small landscape plugs or larger plants or however you're gonna plant the thing, you're really, you could waste a lot of money and a lot of time, couldn't you, if you don't prepare your canvas, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to look at this. I think one of the things we overlook is just site analysis. Especially if you are converting part of your lawn into a meadow type garden landscape, I always like to tell folks, well, what part of your landscape, or what, you know, any part of your landscape, where are things struggling? Maybe there's too much shade, so lawn can't grow, or you feel like you can only grow hosta there. That's probably a perfect place to think about doing something meadowish with native plants. Or, you know, we're all experiencing cycles of drought and heat right now. We last year in eastern Nebraska, we were in drought level 4. It was just insane, and lawns were dying left and right. So maybe in the really hot open areas, or maybe you have sandier soil in those areas, that's a perfect place to think about doing something more sustainable. It's going to be more drought tolerant or resilient to the climate change that we are in, and that will only get worse. So that's your first area to go to, the site analysis. You know, what's struggling, what kind of shade is there, how is water flowing from the site, what kind of weed pressures are there, all that good stuff. But then the practical, I know you want me to talk about practical lawn.
Sure, but no, but I want you to tell us how you think before you dig in any way, literally or figuratively, because again, if people rush, you know, if they just go order the plants or order the seed and think it's just going to happen, I mean, that there's a lot more thinking that needs to go into it, and a bunch of hard work too.
Yeah, and especially, and the hard work isn't just in the prep either, or the planting. It can be for a year or two afterward. As you know,
Yes.
sometimes these sites have a lot of weed pressure that we just can't anticipate. We don't know what weed seeds are in the soil bank, so you really need to keep on top of some of those weeds. Some are more problematic than others. You don't have to worry about all of them, but if you keep on them the first year or two, then you're really helping the plants establish and get going. After that, it tends to be a lot less work, especially if you're planting densely in layers in the native plant communities that are endemic to the area and fit your site and all that good stuff.
So there's prep and there's aftercare, and we have to make a commitment to our planning prep and aftercare then.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully that aftercare and that management is it's fun for you. Like you like to go out there and, oh, what's that cool plant? Oh, look what that cool thing is doing. I never knew it was going to do that. That's neat. So, you know, just going out there and 10-minute walk every day, and you just take care of one little thing during that 10 minutes every day. It doesn't have to be a big, I have to order 10 yards of mulch and spread it and blow out my back sort of thing.
So in terms of the prep, I mean, if we do evaluate our site and we've chosen an area, maybe based on one of your examples that would be good for transitioning, then so let's say and we're saying that it's in turf grass right now. There's a number of different ways to eliminate that turf grass in order to give the new plants, the desired plants, a chance. So what kind of ways are there to do that?
There's four or maybe five ways to do that, and I'm gonna preface this with some caveats by saying it sort of depends a little bit on what your ideology is, as far as prep and sort of how much time commitment you have, and if it's a front yard or a backyard, because I don't think you want to put plastic out in a front yard for an entire growing season. I don't know how your neighbors would feel about that. But then there's also, you know, your physical ability. How much can you actually do? So the first amendment, well, I already mentioned plastic. People will put out a sheet of plastic, black, white, whatever, blue tarp or something, to kill whatever is there on site. And what happens a lot is folks will do that just one time. And that's actually not what you should do. You should do it for 4 weeks, take the cover of the plastic off for 2 weeks, let weed seeds germinate, let new things germinate so they're not going to cause problems for you down the road. Then after 2 weeks, put that tarp back on again. And you do that a couple of times for an entire growing season. And that will really set you up for a lot of success. But again, tarps blow away. Your neighbors might not like to see your whole front yard in a tarp. There's microplastics coming off of that plastic sheeting, and then you got to dispose of it, and it's more plastic waste. So there are pros and cons to that.
Solarization is one. Or
Solarization.
tarping, it's depending on whether you use a clear or a dark colored piece of plastic. Solarization or tarping is one method, not to be just put down once and you think you've solved everything. Because as you pointed out, and you pointed out earlier, there can be a really deep seed bank of weed seeds that want to have the next generation, the next generation, and the next generation. So we're going to tarp. We're going to let some of those then the next generation emerge. We're going to tarp again, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's you know, if you want to be really really thorough, that's what you can do for the next method, which is using a chemical application, right? So a glyphosate based product. Now, if you have a super pristine lawn and it's thick and lush and green, and you've like spent a lot of money maintaining it, chances are, this is not guaranteed, but chances are your weed seed bank is not going to be as crazy as something that has, you know, a lot of weeds already in it that you can see, clovers and I don't know, God knows what, right? So with glyphosate, if you want to be really careful, you can spray and then wait a couple of weeks and see what comes up and spray again and do that for a couple of months. Or you can do the one-time application, put down an inch of mulch, which is what we do. And that will help reduce some of those annual weed seeds from germinating, because those seeds need sunlight before they can do anything. And then we put all of our plant plugs in the ground. So I hope that just made sense.
So you have this on your website. You call this option the use of chemical herbicide. You call this "You'll hate me for this." That's your
Oh, yeah.
that's your name. Because and it is true. And I always like to say whenever this subject comes up about using chemical applications in any instance, is that even conservation organizations do this in the least toxic method possible for the greater good, which is not to say broadcast spraying anytime they see one little weed in a crack in the sidewalk, you know, taking out a gallon of something. It's not willy-nilly. It's focused, it's according to the package directions, it's with a purpose, and it's for the greater good to then be planting something. So, you know, again, conservation organizations that run, you know, properties, wilder properties where invasives are taking over and so forth, they do use them because they want to bring back the native plants and so forth. So we're not saying we're in favor, we're like big believers in herbicides. We're saying this is one way that you can do it, that if you do it smartly, it's a minimal amount and it can be for the greater good, that you can end up with a meadow, which is much more diverse than that lawn you got rid of. Yes.
Yes. Thank you. That was a perfect speech. And I also want,
I rehearsed it. Yeah.
I also want to add, you know, it's not that expensive and it's not that labor intensive. So that's a great boon for people who are for those conservationists too, but also I think for us. And, you know, it's the only thing we ever use and it's the only time we ever use it. So it's a one-time shot.
Right. So those are two possibilities, solarization and the you'll hate me for this herbicide method. Yes. Sort of like solarization, you could also smother it with other materials, right?
Mm-hmm, I mean, cardboard, newspaper. Yeah. That's the lasagna method.
You call that what? Sheet mulching?
Sheet mulching. Yes. Mm. Yeah. That's
so tell
something
us how you do that. Yeah.
I mean, that's something I've never done because, well, I'm usually working on a larger project, so
right.
I don't have 10,000 square feet of cardboard, right? So yeah, if you're working in a smaller area and you want to, and this fits your ideology and your back and your knees are all in cooperating with you, you can put down that, maybe scalp the lawn really short, put down a layer of cardboard or newspaper, thick newspaper, wet it a little bit, put on some mulch or put on a little bit of topsoil. I guess it depends on what your site conditions are like. And you can let that sit over the winter so it mixes all in and biodegrades, or if you can wet that cardboard right away, you can just dig right into it and start planting.
Mm. Dan Jaffe Wilder at Norcross in Massachusetts, you know, he and he's been doing that in his own yard a lot, again on a smaller scale, not in his big, you know, restoration projects, but in his own yard. And yeah, he adheres to that a lot, and I've heard other people describe it that sort of smothering kind of thing. And yeah, and it, you know, kind of using recycled materials and so forth, other than the mulch. So that's another method. Now, then, how much longer would I plant into that? You know, get my baby plants in there.
What do you mean, how much longer?
Oh, I'm sorry. How much longer? How much later? How much later?
Okay.
It's hot
okay.
here. I'm sorry.
I know.
How much later? So it's like, you know, I want to make sure that I've done my job of sort of smothering those, you know, what was there, the turf and so forth. So then if I did that this summer or fall and I let it sit all winter, could I plant next spring, or how do I know when it's okay to plant, or can plant right away, or what's the timeline?
Yeah,
okay.
Both.
Okay.
I think you do it either way. If you plant right away, you want to make sure that cardboard is good and wet, so it's easier to dig into. But again, as with any planting, no matter what method you're doing, anytime you dig into the soil and disturb it, you never know what you're going to bring to the surface around that planting hole. So
that's for
surprise.
Sure.
Have fun.
Yeah. And then what's another method that we could consider?
Yeah, I think this is the last one. I don't know. I lost count. Now this one is a little bit more adventurous. This is something I've done on my private property, 2,500 square feet out back, where I had a lawn, I hated lawn. I just stressed it out. I never watered it. I never fertilized it. And when I mowed really high. So that really stressed the lawn. So I had lots of patches open up, right? Lots of open spaces. And I just started planting things here and there in groups and masses. And then I threw down some seed, and eventually those plants spread and took over and killed the last remnants of lawn that were out there.
So you kind of direct planted almost overseeded your weakened lawn. Is that the idea?
Overseeded and planted straight into it. Now this is a fescue lawn, a tall fescue lawn I'm talking about. So there are differences if you have something more a more sociable, aggressive lawn like what's a zoysia or something like that.
Interesting. And you said you mowed it really high to stress it out.
Well, yeah, well, not on purpose. I'm a lazy lawn taker care of earth. So I would let it grow really long, like, 8 inches or 12 inches or something. And then it's behind a fence, nobody can see it, and then just finally it's like, oh, I guess I should mow it. Ugh. So yeah,
So
that
that,
stresses it out.
and then, I mean, I suppose we could also rent a sod cutter, right? I mean, that's
Oh yes, that's
it's
another
He-Man.
option.
It's kind of really it's a macho machine. Excuse me for sounding sexist, but it's a pretty it's not a lightweight machine, a sod cutter, is it?
I know people of all gender identities who are macho, so whatever.
No, but all I meant was it takes some muscle to
Yes,
run a
a
sod cutter.
lot of muscle, and you got to
Yeah,
have a
that's all I
trailer,
mean.
and you got to go to the hardware store to pick it up. And maybe I should go through the cons of all these methods in like 10 seconds. So yeah,
Yeah, we can
sod
do
cutter.
that, but a sod cutter is another way, right? So that'd
Yeah,
be maybe
sod
a
cutter
better
is another way.
yeah.
But then you're spewing out all that exhaust from the sod cutter. What do you do with all that sawdust left over, especially if it's weed infested? You don't, I mean, do you really want to compost that? Probably not. Back to sheet mulching, there's been some studies that show when you put that cardboard layer down, you're actually impeding water and air transfer between the soil and the atmosphere. With solarizing, you're baking the soil, you're frying it, so you're frying all the soil life that's in there. And don't ever till, folks. Tilling is the worst thing you can do on so many levels. You're going to have so much weed pressure. You're destroying the soil structure. You're killing soil life. It's just the worst prep method ever.
Yeah, so each one has its, and we know the herbicides, the downside of the herbicide. So
Yes,
each one,
yes.
there's pros and cons, and that's why you said at the beginning, we kind of each have to make our own decision weighing those, our sort of ethical, philosophical, what we're comfortable with, and the amount of work we can do, and the budget, and whatever else. So, so there's a
Most
lot of different ways.
important thing is just reduce your lawn because we have too much of it.
Right, exactly. Well, and so besides prep, I mean, you kind of were just talking about tilling and about in a few places along the way in our conversation, you've mentioned about the weed seeds that are in the soil and so forth, and the seed bank in the soil, and I find that with maintaining a meadow, the sort of weeding, even if I know how to identify what I wish to reduce or get rid of as the meadow evolves and changes. I have a much older meadow, and so I have woody things that want to live in it, right? Because it's succession is happening. And so I have a lot of, like brambles, like rubus species and so forth that want to be in it. And, there's like, I always have that question of, well, do I dig them out and open up? Well, how the roots of rubus are, blackberry or raspberry are. It's like, do I open up all that soil and potentially end up with more things sprouting up, or how do you do that? What is your sort of tactic for in aftercare?
There's so many ways to approach this because disturbance can actually be a beneficial thing, right? Because it sets some new things in motion. And out here in eastern Nebraska, a lot of our meadows, prairies, they tend to get grass dominant. So we have to bring in a little bit of disturbance, and that can be through grazing, it can be through fire. In a smaller landscape, that can be through, yeah, digging up trees or berry shrubs or weeds or whatever. And then you have that gap, and that gives you an opportunity to introduce a new forb species in there, or to let other plants sort of self-sow in there. So I think disturbance is it can be really helpful in sort of resetting things a little bit, especially to. I mean, it can also be negative. You don't know. You could have some really bad stuff move in, but yeah. So And I always like to tell people this too. And again, this is site dependent. It depends on if you're trying to do a front yard, really highly designed landscape that your neighbors are gonna are going to be won over by, or if it's more backyard, larger acreage, and you just can't go in there and maintain every square foot. Because if it's this larger backyard, more wilder space, then you don't need to be anal retentive about the weeds. And there are weeds like crabgrass and foxtail. They're just annuals. As long as we have the good stuff growing fast and dense and thick and out competing and shading the soil, those annual weeds are going to go away and they're not a problem. I tried to explain this to a weed inspector once, but we lost and we lost the garden and just didn't want to be patient because it was a front yard space. So like in a front yard, more design space, you want to keep up on that weed management, even if they are annual weeds. But if it's a thick landscape, most people walking by probably aren't going to notice what is a weed and what isn't.
Right, right. So in the last minute or two, is there another question besides this sort of aftercare weed thing? Is there another like little tip or something that you're asked all the time that you, besides the prep and what you just said about the weeding, any other one that's like the hit parade of questions that you find yourself telling people all the time?
I'm married. I'm not available. I'm sorry. No.
With your jokes, you have some pretty funny jokes on. You have elevator jokes and all kinds of jokes on the new website. You're cracking me up.
Elevator jokes press all my buttons. I don't like them. One of the things I get asked, top five at least is, or this is a comment, I have a really shady urban lot, so I know I can't have a meadow garden. And I'm just like, no, I've got 20 plants I can list off the top of my head. We can create a wonderful shade meadow in that landscape. You don't just have to have hosta and a stilbe or, you know, and then a bunch of wood mulch or just bare soil. We can get a bunch of sedge in there and get that matrix ground cover layer going with a bunch of different sedge species. And then we have so many woodland for perennial and ephemeral and biennial species that we can bring in there. And you can have a shade meadow. Absolutely.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, that's a good one to end on too. That's a very optimistic, and it kind of widens the, ooh, I can do this kind of possibilities for people. So I could talk to you a lot more. And also I could have you just come on and we could do a whole segment on your telling jokes, elevator jokes, but we won't do that. But thank you. Thank you, Benjamin, for making the time. And as I said, we'll have a book giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. So I hope I'll talk to you again soon. And congratulations on doing the new website, which I'll give links to, of course, and everything as well. So
awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you, Margaret.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.